Welcome to the Influential Women Podcast, the podcast where we chat to inspiring women about adversity and how we can feel uplifted from their stories and think differently about our own lives. This is Nikki Bannerman, and my influential woman today is also called Nikki, Nikki Sprins. Hello, Nikki.
Hello, Nikki. Gonna get very confusing.
Nikki is the managing director of a digital design product and game studio, a journalist, and the co-founder of a women's community in tech. Now, Nikki, you've been involved with the fabulous NHS, which we've all celebrated in lockdown, and are supporting the nation. And you have a passion and commitment to health, as does this podcast, to health and well-being. You led the commercial direction of a positive well-being and health app. Now, it's called Mood Notes, isn't it? Do you want to tell us about that?
So Mood Notes was something we created in partnership with a Californian-based group of psychologists called Thriveport. And the idea was that our emotional well-being should be at the core of everything we do. But essentially, a lot of us perhaps don't necessarily have the time or space, and there's so much stigma attached to mental health that we don't necessarily think about our mental well-being and our emotional well-being just in the day-to-day. So the idea was, how can we create this very simple journal where you could simply swipe up to express what your face might represent if you were feeling happy, sad, okay, angry. And it was developed in partnership with these psychologists. So scientific thinking around CBT and thought checking was all baked into the experience. And recently, actually, Thriveport was acquired by another company. So it's no longer an Us Two and Thriveport product, but which we're very happy for them, because that's obviously the way of the world on the west coast of the US. But it was a really amazing experience when we developed that together.
Wow, that's amazing. And actually, well-being, you know, couldn't be more at the forefront, and mental health as to what's going on out there. I mean, what is going on out there is the big question, isn't it? How have you coped? Have you been okay?
Such a good question. Just this weekend, we were talking about how do you balance that impetus for doom scrolling, that late night sort of Twitter addictive sort of cycle of following all of what feels like quite a lot of oppressive news at the moment, understandably, for lots of people who have either lost loved ones or are very concerned about their family members who might get sick, or even about kind of politics or anything beyond that. And I've got to say, I don't necessarily have the answer, but what I am very grateful for is that I am able to get out the door and run. And so for me, how I manage my kind of emotional, mental well-being, I mean, let's call it mental health, let's really kind of be upfront about that, is just by putting on trainers and running out the door when I can. And I have to balance that with obviously the day job and two young children and whatever else is going on in my life. But just running in the outdoors, whether it's sun or rain, I don't mind. I'm a kind of all-weather runner. It just, that really is for me how I kind of keep my mental health in check.
Definitely. And I think if we can't look after ourselves, you know, we can't look after anyone else. You know, I'm a mother too. And actually, that doom scrolling, as you say, I've stopped watching the news. I just do Twitter occasionally. You know, I watch the news feeds, but I don't respond to all the negativity. It's exactly as you say, taking care of your own mental well-being, your own mental health on a daily basis and being present, isn't it? It's really back to mindfulness. And I love what you're doing with your app. And I think that's what the teens are doing. You know, I've got two teens myself, in terms of they're expressing emotion, not just from happy and sad. In terms of the faces, as you say, there's a whole lot more than just happy and sad, and or both within a day or a minute or an hour or whatever. And that sounds a brilliant thing you've invented and actually had over 15,000 monthly users, hadn't it?
Oh yeah, at its peak it was quite extraordinary in terms of engagement. As you say, I think when we first kind of co-created the product with Thriveport, it was very much tapping into the market and recognizing that people need, as you say, the mindfulness, the balance, an outlet in which to express how they're doing. And the whole idea behind the app as well was that you could just quickly identify a face, or you could choose to treat it much more like a CBT journal and therefore go through the thought checking, understand if you were perhaps catastrophizing, how you might be able to work through that feedback process loop. And so it enabled people to really have the different levels of engagement that they might need.
And have you taught or learned about CBT on a deeper level? You know, a lot of our podcasts have touched on NLP and a lot of, you know, mental health and wellness. And it's always an area that's fascinating. Is that something you've personally?
I mean, I haven't done it for a very, very long time. And as part of my own kind of personal health, and perhaps one of the drivers why I am really interested good in health is because of my own sort of, I guess, two big experiences with an illness of the nervous system, which was viral encephalitis when I was 13, and then an illness of the endocrine system when I was 20, which is Graves' disease and autoimmune disorder of the thyroid. And both of those had profound, I guess, psychological effects on me much later, which I didn't understand at the time. And so I did try CBT. I'm not great with it. I learned that there were other ways that I had sort of developed healthier habits, but I think it's fantastic and it's a great tool if anyone is able to access it.
Definitely. And the way, you know, that you talked about your adversity there, because obviously, you know, with this podcast we touch and focus on challenges and adversities that women have thrived and survived from, which we can learn from and gain some positivity in this very negative world, and how you come back from that and the setbacks that you mentioned as a child. The viral encephalitis age 13 left you unable to speak and paralyzed down the left-hand side of your body, which is incredibly traumatic. You made a 95% recovery and learned to speak and walk again. And wow, look what you've done. And affected again when you were pregnant, and the impact of that neurological damage came out when you were pregnant with your second child, didn't it? So it comes back to bite you, but you have to keep fighting it, really, is the message that your strength is giving to those other people out there, you know, no matter what you're fighting. And a lot of that was affected by the brain, wasn't it? And the, as you say, the thyroid, to be able to come back from that and be happy and content again is amazing.
Thank you. Look, it's definitely a journey. I am totally... a work in progress, like most of us. But I recognize resilience. That's something we talk a lot about at work. And I think obviously that's a word that lots of people are using these days. How can people develop their resilience? And it's only much, much later in my life that I've recognized how those experiences, incredibly formative time in my life, have absolutely made me more resilient. And like what, in terms of the word adversity, I guess it took me a long time to realize that to go through the process of being in intensive care in another country, we were in Menorca on a family holiday when I contracted viral encephalitis, and to wake up having been unconscious and to look at my mother as a kind of, I was 13 and to be in intensive care and not be able to ask my mother what was wrong, because I could see or hear the words in my head, but I was unable to articulate them, and then I couldn't move. It was a very terrifying experience.
But you've had complete recovery. And what was that from? It was literally a virus that goes to the brain, right? It's not from mosquito, yes, or anything.
No, it's like, I mean, obviously most people are more familiar with meningitis, which of course is inflammation of the meninges in the brain, and viral encephalitis is inflammation of the brain stem. And so that's sort of an easy way, kind of casually in conversation, that I would explain it to someone. And essentially in me, perhaps because I was left-handed, we don't know, it resulted in the paralysis of the left-hand side of my body. And then effectively, I had to learn to walk and talk again properly. My speech returned far quicker. The mobility of my body took much longer. And so resulted in things like, we had a beautiful dog. And because at the time, my parents thought I wouldn't walk again, I would have to be moved to the ground floor of the house. Our lovely dog went to stay with some other people because he was so energetic and lively, I wouldn't be able to walk him anymore. I didn't really go to school for that first year. I did manage to go back, but there were certain things I couldn't do. I was always really tired. I had headaches. And so there are a lot of things that were associated with that, that I often think of myself, I guess, as a survivor, which I know is a word that is a trigger word for lots of people. So I only mean that in the context of my own health and well-being. And perhaps a better word would be kind of, I fight and I'm willing to kind of fight back. And I believe in somehow that things will get better. And so that's to your question around sort of optimism and the belief that it is possible at some point to get back to a center of gravity, is because I, you know, I think that's possible, even if you literally have to fight to get there.
Gosh, patience. And what a trauma, and how terrifying for your parents, and how, you know, upsetting for you with your school friends and peers and everything to feel that different sense of difference as well. So, you know, it's phenomenal that a lot of things you've been through and come out the other side fantastically. So if we just go back a little bit to, you've been the managing director of B Corp Digital Product Studio. I was thinking it was a Japanese word, but it's actually us too, isn't it? In
yes.
terms of, for 6 years with offices in London, Lisbon and Tokyo, which is very exotic, and made the wildly successful game Monument Valley, a video game, with sales of almost 30 million. I mean, how did you promote that and get that incredible following?
So we should take it back. So us two, in terms of name, is actually the bringing together of Mills and Sinks, who founded the company over 16 years ago. And they were, I guess, coming up with different names, and eventually us two, the two of them. And so they built this company over that period of time. And I was lucky enough to join them on their amazing voyage of discovery 6 years ago. And so Monument Valley was born out of Mills, one of the founders, who had this extraordinary ambition and idea. He wrote them a letter and basically said, you're going to win an Apple Design Award. And they did. And he created within the London team this amazing kind of vision and passion, working with these absolutely incredible design and games artists who just created this extraordinary game that ultimately even ended up in the zeitgeist and kind of programming on Netflix, and has been featured in multiple kind of Apple keynotes, because it is this extraordinary story. And I think what for me really touches me is that the letters that were written into Mills and Sinks, the kind of founders and the whole games team, would be from parents of children in such unexpected circumstances, whether that was perhaps a child with autism or a child who might be feeling lonely, or who completely identified with this amazing game that captured their imagination and enabled them to think about the different levels and the journey that the characters go through. So yeah, it's kind of extraordinary.
So it had a personal journey behind it then, and I know that that's a sort of passion of yours with the meaningful health work and some of the clients that you've had, and Children's Hospital, and founding a play app to make life nicer for kids. So a lot of that is giving back some of the experiences that you must have gone through, assumably.
Yes, I mean, I think the work with Alderhay was so extraordinary. There are moments where all of the work that we do is brilliant and really, really enjoyable, and clients, we love working with interesting problems. I'm fascinated by interesting problems, and maybe that does relate to my own background. And in the case of Alderhay, it's this extraordinary hospital, I don't know if you know it, in Liverpool, which was co-created and designed with the children. And it's absolutely stunning. And the brief that they had was really around how could we help them think about sort of anxiety and reassurance, both for the kids, but also for the parents. And so being able to co-design with children, with the experts, the clinicians, and come up with what we called Alder Play, a VR, AR experience that kind of reflected the critters, they're called, the kind of creatures that are in the hospital physically, and enabled to kind of reward the kids if they were able to, say, eat their food that day or able to have their blood tests, but also enable them to digitally experience what going to the hospital might be like, because obviously that's an incredibly terrifying experience for lots and lots of people. So yeah, that was a really amazing project to work on.
Amazing, and you know, very ahead of the time, and also, you know, very supportive, and as you say, relatable, that they can, you know, transport themselves to that. That's amazing. So you also eradicated the company's gender pay gap and smashed it in terms of, was that equal pay or putting more women on the team with you?
A combination. Ultimately, it wasn't, you know, pay equity, I guess, in terms of equal pay. Us two has always been really good about equal pay for equal work. But perhaps what's really the shift was looking at what is the representation at each kind of level of experience within the studio. So what does the leadership team look like? Do we have enough women on the leadership team? Are we supporting the progression of the women? How are we retaining women? And so that's been a really, really intentional, I guess, agenda, for want of a better word, for the last 5 years, in terms of making sure that we always think about what the diversity of our teams are. And of course, diversity should be more inclusive than gender. There are lots of different factors there. But when we were focusing on ensuring that we did close our gender pay gap, and then now it's 1.82% in favor of women at the moment, how can we make sure that that is constantly front of mind? And things like, we introduced underrepresented in training. So that would mean individuals from across the studio, we would invite them to leadership team meetings, we would mentor them, we gave them one-on-one coaching so they could think about their brand, their own career path, what they wanted to achieve. And that didn't just apply to women, but initiatives like that are really important. And I guess the thing I would always say, you have to care. And that sounds really simple, but I really feel that a lot of these bigger organisations, and I know this year the reporting on it has been cancelled, and I understand, but actually, even in a time of national crisis, we should still be caring about this issue.
Definitely, definitely. And I think, you know, there is a shift. Companies are pivoting and they are starting to care more about their clientele and their home workers. Although there seems to be, you know, new technology coming in to monitor them at home and how long they're working and maybe detracting from that. But I think you're right, caring for the employees and really caring, authentically caring, and having that as a culture throughout the businesses, small or large, is really important. And health and well-being is really important to us as a podcast and to our guests and for our listeners to be helped on that topic. Now, something else that was really interesting talking about businesses and health and well-being was that you championed that it's okay to show vulnerability and honesty in the workplace. Is that within your leadership programs? Because it's something, you know, being female bosses, as you've done and I've done in the past, in hard-nosed, you know, newsrooms you were in, or where there's a lot of men, where crying at your desk or whatever people are going through with their children or their personal life or their health or the menopause or their children, it is now more recognised and okay to talk about, do you think?
I think it definitely also depends on your work environment and your industry. I mean, I definitely remember my first boss telling me only to cry in the loos if I was going to cry at all. And that was a very male dominated environment. Now, I think people recognise more that demanding people shut off so many aspects of their personality and not be able to have emotional response isn't ideal for engagement or, frankly, great work productivity, right? And how do you get the best out of people if you're asking them to lock themselves in the loo when something really bad has happened? But at the same time, I recognise I'm also really lucky to work somewhere that one of our values is be human. And we take that very seriously in everything we do. So that means actually caring about individuals, not just saying we care about you, ensuring that our actions follow our words and that those two things are connected.
Definitely. And being supportive and actually, you know, following through and continuing to support them. I remember just a funny story I'll just sneak in, that when, you know, I was very young, early 20s, worked up in Scotland for a company and witnessed this terrible car accident at lunchtime and came back to the office very shaken up. And my bosses, you know, said, no, you don't have to work for the afternoon. We need to sit you here. They gave me, you know, whiskey or brandy and just chatted it through. And I just thought, I'll never forget that, you know, in terms of how that could have been handled so differently. And it was just really, really special. And it's really treating the person like a, you know, like a friend or a child or a parent or however you treat them, isn't it? Of treating them as a human with human needs and human emotions.
I think, you know, when we talk about authenticity, I know that earlier on in my career, I struggled with the idea, what does that even mean? I mean, that in itself can sometimes put pressure on individuals. How do I be my authentic self? What is our authentic self? Bring your whole self to work. So I think there are questions underneath that. But ultimately, for me, that's just feeling like it's okay at the beginning of a meeting to say, a family member's really ill and I might not 100% be here. I'm just letting you know that. Or we have things called check-ins and check-outs, so that you might at the beginning say, this is the thing I need to share with you all in order for me to be fully attentive in this meeting. And certainly in the environment of lockdown or quarantine, I love being able to say, look, I've got two children here. One is a baby who's going to wail and the other one's got schoolwork. So just letting you know.
And being, you know, and being open and honest, you know, because that brings us closer, surely. And particularly in this environment, that's what everyone needs. I think that's brilliant. I like how you say, yes, I've just got to share this, like share with the group, isn't it? I've just got to share this with you in order for us to move on. And then it's done with, isn't it? It's everyone's offloaded. So we will encourage that to everyone listening out there, you know, people that are bosses, male or female, to make femaleness or maleness, you know, to let the men show they're vulnerable too. There's an incredible problem with men keeping, you know, their terror and thoughts and vulnerability to themselves, and that manifests in terrible consequences. Definitely support them too, and say, you know, the humanness, make it part of your working dialogue, particularly around lockdown. You know, people are suffering so much more on all levels, and if they bring that to work, please help them. I definitely think lockdown has shifted emotions, made us all more human, but there's still a long way to go, isn't there? Now, you've got some other views around the pandemic and our new normal that we're all, I mean, you know, even calling it the new normal is just awful, isn't it? And, the second wave and goodness knows what. Working from home has become a little mnemonic, WFH. You think it's going to be bad for our health. It has good and bad, doesn't it? I've worked from home for quite a long time, so actually it's sort of been quite similar for me. I've been lucky, but that shift and that transition for a lot of people and, you know, the young families and everything, it's been devastating, hasn't it?
I think it's a mix. And I guess that's where, as a leader, I think it's really important to focus, which is it is good for some people. You know, I do talk to people who genuinely value being at home, and they have a good work from home setup, and they have the flexibility within their own kind of whatever that is, family life or general life, to make that work really well. And then I also talk to people who are exhausted, how they get their energy from being able to physically connect with people. And Zoom fatigue is real. You know, whether you're on Hangouts or WebEx or Zoom, whatever your platform is, when you have a day of endless meetings digitally and have no way to kind of physically connect with people, it can be exhausting. I read recently a fantastic piece about the fact that we are all seeing each other in 2D and we never see the kind of full bodily signals and energy that we would normally if we were in a shared space together. So that whole connection and how we kind of bounce off each other and respond, that's kind of gone.
That's so true. Is that 2D, as you say? And I think it is. It's that word energy. And, you know, when I meet some friends and have meetings, that 3D energy, as you say, you can pick up, you know, in the person's body language, how they're really feeling, really how they are. And actually, you feel better from having gone out somewhere else as well. You know, having a change of scene as well is good for us, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I in fact, Nikki, the thing I'd say that is perhaps even worse is a lot of, I know that there's been lots of conflicting reports about is working from home better for productivity or is it not? But my concern is the burnout effect. Because I think what a lot of people are doing is at the beginning in fear for jobs, people were working longer, harder hours to ensure that they weren't in any way kind of on their boss's radar about potentially being made redundant, because obviously there's been a huge number of people who have been furloughed or lost their jobs. And obviously there's nervousness that that may continue given the broader picture. And so lots of people were working longer hours to ensure that they were kind of higher up the list of good good employees. I'm putting quote marks there to make sure that everybody listening realizes that that isn't how you define a good employee. And my concern there is ultimately we've got people working really long hours and it's a burnout effect. So everyone who's seeing a spike in productivity isn't necessarily imagining what it's like to be working from home usually when we're not living in a pandemic.
Yes, definitely. And, you know, I'm guilty of that myself, is that, you know, you start to do emails and work contact on a Sunday or, you know, at midnight and you get a reply and you just say, oh my goodness, I've either woken this person up or they're doing the same thing, working at midnight, and none of us should be doing that, really, should we? We should all be having our own boundaries to have some time out and relax in between. Now, it's probably easier for extroverts, you know, harder for some parents, depending on what they've got going on. I know you've mentioned, obviously, people without outside space or living in flat shares, it's really hard. And you know, everyone going to university now, including my daughter, it's, you know, a phenomenal challenge. So you think it's really a lack of psychologically critical downtime?
I think the lack of downtime is hard. I think there isn't, as you say, the energy piece is tough. The environment in which you're in, I'm thinking a lot about those individuals in flat chairs or people who don't have the luxury of, frankly, a staircase to escape the room in which they're perhaps sleeping, living, working, and they have no way of getting outside. They might not even have a garden. And I know that was, lots of people were talking about how great it was to escape to their garden. And I was thinking, hang on, loads of people in London
don't have a garden, and it's that green space, isn't it, wherever it is, but some of the green space was locked down as well, and that's just really does people's head in, or they weren't allowed to walk their dogs, you know, in certain countries. So some of us are freer than others, and I think it brings us right back again to being grateful every time, because one of the previous trauma podcast guests I had before said you can't feel negative at the same time as feeling grateful. So whenever any negativity seeps into my head, I remind myself of what I'm grateful for, because she said you can't feel those conflicting emotions at the same time. So it's quite interesting actually to bring people back, which I love that. And it actually pulls everyone short, because, you know, we all have bombarded by messages and negativity and things that seep into our heads. And whenever anything starts to, because it can tip over your day or your month or your life or your year even nowadays, that you just think, okay, I've got food on the table, I've got a roof over my head, I'm warm, hang on, you know, this is what we have to be grateful for.
I couldn't agree with you more, Nikki. I say exactly those phrases quite often, actually. There's a roof, we've got food, we've got walls, we're very lucky. I think that is, and it feels strange to be saying that, obviously, because that wasn't what we were saying to ourselves daily, just sort of 7 months ago.
Exactly, exactly. And hopefully, you know, our listeners can gain some strength from that. Now, you've come back from your health adversity. We talked about that resilience and vulnerability, you know, as strengths that we've both talked about. I think that, you know, definitely resilience is something that people are really having to try and find and have never been taught how to. So this podcast wants to make others think differently about their day and the mindset, because even when everything seems a challenge and these mountains to climb, it's one step in front of the other every day. And hopefully our back catalogue of all these podcasts can help people with everyone else's inspirational stories. And in lockdown, I've interviewed people who've been in prison about captivity, mindfulness Buddhist coach who takes people outside, this trauma counsellor I'd mentioned. You know, there's a lot of incredible, inspiring guests, as well as celebrities, broadcasters, authors, to uplift us. So please share that with everyone. So which strong women have inspired you in your life then?
That is a good question. There are quite a few number. And my God, when you remind me of the amazing people in your podcast, I feel very honoured to be on. And in terms of strong, inspiring women, and I think certainly I think of my maternal grandmother in terms of someone who showed grit. I also think that that is key. Grit. She was an Irish immigrant here, worked as a midwife and ultimately matron in the war. And things, you know, there were moments of real, real difficulty and hardship in her life. Boy, did she have grit, real ability to recognize that she could keep going and that it was okay both to recognize that things were tough, but she also just brought people together. There was so much laughter. I felt very, very lucky to know her as a grandchild. I didn't know my other grandparents as well. Unfortunately, they died before, apart from one other relative. And so she was just this extraordinary, inspiring woman who looked after my grandfather when he was ill. I guess he brought up my mother and my uncle, but balanced as well the ability to work and be a parent, which for me was also hugely inspiring. I think, you know, growing up in the 80s and then reading lots of the literature in the 90s about women can do it all, women can't do it all, there's lots of conflicting information. And here was this amazing woman who had worked and had a family, and things have gone terribly wrong at certain moments in time. And it, obviously, it's incredibly difficult for lots of people who lived through the war, and some of them might have had PTSD, which my grandfather definitely did. And therefore, just to know that there she, and she was, you know, she always had her handbag and there were always sweets in it. And it was just, she just had to balance that ability of being very, very human, but also quite kind of tough, and recognizing that sometimes in the face of adversity, we just have to know that we can keep going because there will be respite at some point.
Oh, bless her. She sounds brilliant. And actually, I think, you know, we need to reflect on that in terms of the war. You know, my parents and a lot of other people's parents went through that long period. And this is actually a very short period, but it feels like a very long period. And we need to bring ourselves back to that, you know, that actually we are very lucky and privileged, and we will have fun again. It might not be for a while, but we can have fun in different ways and pull ourselves up on that. And she sounds fabulous. I like her grit. Can we talk about your passions then? But first, we just want to say we love collaborating with other guests and businesses who share our health and well-being values, as you do, and how we can help uplift each other sharing our journeys. So if any empowering female businesses or brands would like to partner with our show and advertise with us, please contact me at nikkibannermanradio.co.uk or tag us on Instagram on influential_women_podcast and let us know what you love about the show. So back to our guest today, I'm talking to Nikki Sprins, and she's telling us about how she spends her time off, if you have any time off.
Yes, what does time off look like? Things that I enjoy doing for my well-being. I mentioned running, that is key. Sometimes I steal a moment for a bit of yoga, because to your earlier point, Nikki, I totally agree. It's very grounding, mindfulness, breathing, all of that is so, so important. I also love to draw. I don't get much time to do that, although I was doing a fun project with my daughter yesterday where she was investigating the sources of light in our household. And so we did a bit of a cross-section of the house to help her figure that out. And really, and I suppose this is sort of strange to say this at a time when we can't do this with the rule of six, but I love cooking and I love having people over to cook for. So I'm trying to find new ways around that. You know, what does cooking look like if you're cooking for the same people day in, day out, several times a day?
Oh, well done. So you're giving yourself challenges. So what's next for you then, Nikki?
I hope that I can continue to ensure that I focus on leadership roles that are about making a meaningful difference. And I love the fact that you've identified how much health and well-being means to me. So ensuring that I can kind of bring my energy and my focus to thinking about ways that we can make people more aware of how they can improve their health. And obviously digital is one brilliant way to do that. Sometimes I think I'll jack it all in and become a pottery teacher, which it wouldn't be that random, because that my first job was to be assistant to a pottery teacher. So it would be like going back to the beginning. But I'm not sure. I think one of the things, perhaps as a result of, you know, being 13 and thinking, not knowing if I'd walk again or survive what had happened, is that I recognise the fragility sometimes of life. And so I don't plan too far ahead because I like living in the moment as much as I can.
Interesting. And you learned that very young. And actually, that's very relevant and very topical for today. And that's a brilliant note, you know, to end on and inspire people that actually, you know, to just be patient and know that, you know, it will get better for all of us. And we've had some fun today, even in this bleak, dire times that we're going through. I've really enjoyed talking to you today, Nikki.
Nikki, thank you so much. It's been lots of fun. And I love that as a leaving thought for everyone.
Thank you so much, Nikki, for your thoughts and your serenity and games and coming back from challenges and health and well-being that you have suffered from and will inspire others through. Thank you for that. This Influential Women's podcast is co-founded and host-presented by exec producer Nikki Bannerman and award-winning exec producer Juliet Nichols, and produced by Saffron Mirza. Please subscribe for free and keep listening for more podcast guests and 3 years of back catalogue on our channel on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and all your usual podcasting platforms. If you love the real-life stories and what we do, please share, join our conversation on social, and tell us what you love, and get free episodes straight to your inbox every other Tuesday.